Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Wherever you're listening to this right now, these are the worst day movies ever. My name is Greg Knox, and I thank you very much for listening to the latest episode of the show. If you have not done so already, please give me a thumbs up, give me a like, subscribe to the show wherever you're listening to this right now, be it on Spotify, be it on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, I guess as we're meant to call it now, Google Podcasts, all that good stuff. Yeah, it helps me out. It gives me a reason to do these shows, other than just the enjoyment of watching all these really, really horrible movies for you guys, as is the case today, because I'm, as you've seen from the title of the show, I'm going to be talking about Martyrs. So on the last show, I talked about Irreversible. Irreversible's very, very infamous French film from the 2000s. It's got the most infamous rape scene in film history, possibly, in there. I found Martyrs harder to watch than Irreversible, believe it or not. Or, well, it's an interesting story, and I don't want to spoil too much of it, but my experience with Martyrs is very kind of different from a lot of people. Martyrs is a film that, when I first watched it, moved me very, very greatly, and it had a very profound effect on me. As anyone who kind of listens to this show regularly knows, I don't really get that's kind of affected by what I watch, particularly when it's kind of really disturbing or horrible content like this. But Martyrs did. Like, I watched it, didn't know what I was getting into, didn't know what to expect, and I watched it, and at the end I was just kind of left a bit of a shell of a man afterwards. And I go into all this on the show, yeah, bit of a different show. So I'm recording this after I've actually watched Martyrs, but when I kind of recorded the first half of this show, I hadn't actually seen Martyrs yet. Like, I watched it obviously before, like I just said, but I hadn't seen it since, and I was quite scared to watch it. Like, this episode was delayed. Normally I try and do episodes kind of every kind of week and a half to 10 days, and this one's been delayed for various reasons that are anxiety related, because I suffer from like anxiety from doing these shows, and doing Martyrs kind of wasn't exactly very helpful for that, unfortunately. You know, it's a great film. I'm happy that I watched it again, but yeah, it was a lot of work to do it. Let's put it that way. But I don't want to, you know, put you guys on a downer. Obviously, this film has a reputation for being a difficult watch, and it is deserved in a lot of ways. There's a lot of content in there that is disturbing, you know, if you're bothered by suicide, for example, or self-harming, then maybe this is not a good show for you to listen to. But, you know, I always say this, but these are the worst day movies ever, so you kind of should know what you're getting into. Also, I spoil the absolute fuck out of this film. I spoil the fuck out of all the films that I talk about on this show, but this one in particular, I kind of go for it a lot from sort of pretty much beginning to end. Not in order. As I always say, it's not a show where I'm going to go, and then the film started, and this happened, and this happened, and this happened, and I thought it was good that this happened, and all that kind of stuff, because I'm not a fan of shows like that. But hey, my point is, they're going to be spoilers, not just for the original, but for the remake of Martyrs as well. And oh boy, have I got a lot to say about that. So yeah, without further ado, I'm going to stop rambling now, and let's go on with the show. This is my review of Martyrs. When I make an episode of this show, what I do, and it's a pretty obvious thing to do, is I watch the film that I'm going to talk about. I watch it at least a couple of times, make notes, and then I talk about it afterwards. fresh in my mind. But this episode is going to be a little bit different because, well, the film that I'm talking about today is Martyrs. And Martyrs is very different from pretty much every other film that I've talked about on this show. So believe it or not, despite the fact I've talked about some really, really fucked up films on this show, like I've talked about Cannibal Holocaust, I've talked about the Vomit Core trilogy, I've talked about the August Underground trilogy, and all these other kind of disturbing films, they haven't really had that much of an impact on me in terms of being able to rewatch them. So I haven't talked about this on the show before, but one of my favourite films is Requiem for a Dream, and I've always said that even though that film is considered one of the most depressing films ever made, if you asked me, Greg, do you want to watch Requiem for a Dream right now? I'd say, yeah, fuck yeah. And I would watch it happily without any issues whatsoever. Even Cannibal Holocaust or any of those kind of cannibal films with the animal cruelty in them. The animal cruelty is not very nice, and I'd prefer not to watch it. In fact, a lot of the times I just kind of turn my head away when those particular scenes come on, but I don't feel unclean afterwards for the most part, or depressed, or shaken to my very core. But Martyrs is a bit different from that. So, there are only three films that I've watched in my life that I can't really watch again. One of them is Eden Lake, and that's a mixture of things, which I'll kind of go into when I talk about Martyrs in a bit more detail later on. The other one is Dear Zachary, which for anyone who's watched Dear Zachary, it's one of the most depressing films I've ever seen in my life. And even though it's, you know, it's not a horrible film, it's not exploitative or anything like that, the subject matter and kind of the things that happen in the film and the way it's done, it's just something I could just never see myself watching ever again. Maybe I will for this show one day, I don't know, but it's just not something I can ever realistically see myself ever watching again. And the third one is Martyrs. And Martyrs is a bit of a weird situation because horror films don't tend to have like an impact on me. Like, anyone who's a regular listener of this show will know I'm quite a hardened kind of horror film watcher. I'm quite desensitized to a lot of stuff, but there's something about Martyrs that's a little bit different. So I watched it only once before, which was in 2009, and I was at the flat I was staying in at the time. I'd rented it from Love Film. Never seen it before. I'd heard about its reputation from when it was shown at Fright Fest, and I was like, okay, cool, I'll watch it, whatever. And I watched it kind of in the best sort of surroundings and scenario to watch a film by yourself, is I had it right in front of me, headphones on, and I was kind of fully immersed in the experience of watching it. And when it finished, I was just shaken to my very core. I really was. It took me a good 5 minutes to kind of stand up from where I had been sat at the time where I watched the film. So anyway, I'm rambling a little bit in this intro, but my point I'm trying to make is that as I'm talking to you guys right now, I have not actually rewatched this film yet. So what you'll hear is for the first kind of few minutes of this review, I'm going to be talking about Pascal Logier, I'm going to be talking about New French Extremity, and I might even talk about the synopsis, but I've not actually watched the film yet. So this is kind of the pre bit. So this is the bit where I haven't watched Martyrs yet. So when I record the rest of the review, shall we say, it's going to be my kind of immediate reaction straight after having watched Martyrs. And it's going to be very, very interesting. So it's a bit of an experiment, this show. So I hope you guys dig it. And we'll see kind of what happens from there. So Martyrs was directed by Pascal Logier, and it came out in 2008. Who is Pascal Logier? He started as an assistant to Christoph Gantz on his film Brotherhood of the Wolf. He was a production assistant on that film, as well as making a very, very small acting role in the film itself. From what I've read online, his main responsibility was to film a behind-the-scenes sort of documentary of the making of Brotherhood of the Wolf. So anyway, from there, he directed his first film, which is called St. Ange, or House of Voices, very, very generic kind of English title. Very strangely, it was a film that was made in both French and English. So there are actually two versions of the film made at exactly the same time. When the film first started, I was very, very concerned that it's going to be sort of a kind of haunted house, sort of haunted orphanage type movie. So this came out just after films like Devil's Backbone and the others. So I was like, oh no, it's going to be sort of a haunted house film. But although it does have tropes of that kind of type of horror film, there's actually slightly more going on in it. It's got stuff like jump scares in it, and it's got sort of, you know, patience and things like that. But, I mean, to me, there was a little bit more going on. Also, what I thought was quite cool is this film stars Catriona McCall from Lucio Fulci's Gates of Hell trilogy. She's not in the film that much. It's more like an extended cameo, which is a bit of a shame. But, you know, hey, for people like me who a gimps for like Italian horror films, it was really, really cool that she was there. My thoughts on the film are that, similar to all of Logier's other films, the film kind of starts and you think it's going to be one type of film, and then about halfway through it changes tack and becomes something slightly different in a way that you didn't expect, and then the film ends on a sort of downbeat note, and this is no different. It also introduces the trope that Logier uses in all his other films, where the film you'll find that his films don't really have a lot of men in them. Bechdel would love these films. That's all I'm going to say, because the main characters are always women, pretty much without exception in all his films, and this is no different. But what I was going to say is this film is the first one that has sort of two main female characters, one of whom is psychologically damaged or has some very extreme trauma in their lives that they have not recovered from, and a character who is a bit more sort of straight, who then the damaged character kind of drags with them along the way, the most obvious example being Martyrs. This is the first example of that. Did I like the film? I really didn't like this film for the first half of it. I thought it was quite boring. Not a lot really happened for the first half, and it's only from about the halfway point that it actually started to get going, and there was some interesting visual nods, shall we say, to Martyrs, particularly kind of in the last third of the film. But not really that interesting. Like, all his other films, apart from Martyrs, really aren't that amazing. Like, Martyrs is a bit of a weird kind of one-off where he made, like, even though, you know, say, I haven't seen it, but my memory of Martyrs from, you know, 12 years ago is that it was this really, really good, very powerful film. And all his other films really are not as good at all. There's actually quite a huge distance. So, I mean, the film is not without merit, but it's not something that I would ever really want to watch again. It's okay. It's only really something that I would, you know, recommend if you are a completist, shall we say. And then he made Martyrs, which obviously I'm going to go into a lot more detail in a bit. Now, like a lot of his contemporaries, so Alexandre Aya got dragged over to America to make the Hills Have Eyes remake, which I reviewed on this very podcast a couple of years ago. Check that episode out if you haven't seen it. And annoyingly, Pascal Logier was supposed to direct a remake of Hellraiser. So he just made Martyrs, this very, very brutal film. On paper, this sounds like an absolute dream combination of material and director. Clive Barker was apparently really, really on board for Logier to direct this remake, but it never happened. One of the things that you'll find about Logier is that he seems very single-minded in terms of what he wants to do. Like, he's never made any films in the Hollywood system that either made in France or made in Canada. And they're all based on his own scripts. So he's a writer-director on all his films. So in that regard, it's a good and a bad thing that he hasn't actually made any films in Hollywood. Like, Alexandre Aya, for example, has never made any films as good as Hortense Shaw, to me. The directors of Inside, Julien Maury and Alexandre Bustillo, have never made a film as good as Inside. I mean, God, anyone who's seen Leatherface that film is terrible. So that's what can happen when you take a director who is, you know, making good films in their own country, and you take them to America and you put all these restrictions on them in terms of the kind of content they can make. So anyway, unfortunately, Logier had, should we say, creative differences with the producers of the Hellraiser franchise, and he ended up not doing it, which is a bit of a shame, because God knows that franchise really, really needs a lot, particularly if they're going to bring it back. So that was a shame, unfortunately. It was 4 years before Logier directed another film. So this one is one of the films that he's made in Canada. So it's The Tall Man, which came out in 2012. This one stars Jessica Biel, Stephen McHattie, who is a very welcome presence, particularly in any films based in Canada. And also the cigarette-smoking man from The X-Files, he's in it. It's, again, a sort of a film that leads you to believe that it's one type of film, and then there's a massive, massive twist in it. So the story of The Tall Man is that it's set in a small rural town in Northwest America. It's very, very run down. All the people there are poor. They're not like white trash. It's not a Rob Zombie film. Not quite that bad. But people aren't exactly, you know, flowing with money, shall we say. Jessica Biel is a nurse in the town. Her husband has apparently died, and a lot of the children in the town are going missing, and they're talking about this tall man, apparently that's what he's called, not very imaginative with their names clearly, who is apparently going around and kidnapping these children, never to return. And guess what, you know, Jessica Biel, she's got a son, and then he goes missing, wouldn't you believe it. And I kind of don't really want to give away the spoiler, but there's a very, very audacious twist in this film that you will never see coming in a million years. What I've just told you the film is, that's really not what the film is at all. And whether you like the film or not, it's going to depend on whether you are on board with the twist. Let's put it that way. Did I enjoy the twist? It baffled me. I'm not going to lie, the twist completely threw me for a loop for about 20 minutes. It's similar, ironically, to the twist in Hortense Shawn. It's like, you're either with it or you're not. If you're with it, great, you can just go along and kind of, you know, enjoy the ride. Whereas, you know, if you don't, then you're like, oh, really? This is fucking shit. What's this? This is nonsense. And then you just, the film's probably lost you. It's one of these films that not a lot of people have seen, and a lot of people don't like it. I'm not going to say it's a good film. The film's not actually that interesting looking. It's got that kind of low-budget American film look. Like my friend Tom, who reviewed Saw with me, he says this shot in Vancouver look, which, you know, hey, it was shot in Canada. It's a Canadian production. So, yeah, it's got that kind of sort of DTV look, which isn't great. I mean, you can tell that Logier has talent, because it's not a complete disaster in terms of the way it looks, but the film is sort of all right. Like I said, whether you enjoy the film or not depends on whether you can kind of go with the twist or not, but, you know, I just thought it was okay, is my short review of that one. And then his last feature-length film to date is a film called Ghostland, or as it was known when it first came out, Incident in a Ghostland, which I first saw around the time that it came out at Frightfest in, well, 2018. So this one is another Canadian-France production. This one is kind of similar to Martyrs. It's way more similar to Martyrs than The Tall Man. The Tall Man isn't even really a horror film. It's more like a thriller. This one, full-blown horror, kind of torture porny, again, going back to some Martyrs. Story of this one, you've got two girls and their mother. They're going to a house which belongs to the family which they've inherited. They move in, there's all these creepy dolls everywhere, and then essentially these two guys, one of whom is dressed like a woman, the other one is this huge bald man, appear, and they kill the mother, and they essentially kidnap the two girls. And then it transpires that it's a dream, and then the main character, you know, who was a teenager at the start of the film, is now an adult, and she's now a successful author, and she's appearing on television, and she's got this book based on the events that apparently happened in the film. The film is very, very... It's I don't know if it's meant to be a twist. It's kind of very, very early telegraphed in the film what is actually happening. And then it becomes very apparent sort of midway through the film. Yes, it is actually that sort of twist that's happening. The film is pretty good, I would say. I would say the film is better than The Tall Man. It's not as good as Martyrs. And it's got some interesting ideas in there and some sort of very kind of, I guess, interesting sort of production design in terms of the way the house looks, the use of sort of dolls, your two kind of bad guy characters, the two antagonists are sort of very similar to something probably from like The Hills Have Eyes or Texas Chainsaw Massacre and something like that. And they drive away in what's called a candy truck, which I thought was, I don't know, that was kind of interesting. Again, it's not the sort of film that I would say you absolutely have to watch, but it's okay. Again, that's what I would say. You've got Martyrs, which is, you know, really good, and then you've got these three other films that are kind of okay to average to not that great, depending on your point of view. So anyway, so my point is that if you like Martyrs, you might like some of these other films, but if you only watch Martyrs, then you're fine. You're not really missing out on anything. And then there was a remake of Martyrs, which Logier had nothing to do with, but I'm going to go into that at the end of this show. So at this point, I should probably talk about the history of horror in terms of what was going on in France at this point in time. So on the last show, it was on Irreversible with Marissa Love Hartman. It was a really, really good show. I advise you to check it out if you haven't done so already. And I talked a little bit on that episode about New French Extremity. So this is the group of films that came out sort of in the late 90s, early 2000s in France that are very transgressive. You had either a lot of sexual content or a lot of violence or a mixture of the two, shall we say. And at that time, you did have, you know, Hortense Shaw, Alexandra Aya, which is slightly different in that all the other films in the movement are basically art house films. So someone like Noé or Catherine Breillat or Claire Denis, you know, they are definitely art house directors, whereas Alexandra Aya is definitely someone who's trying to make a horror film. He's unabashedly a horror fan. It's a bit of a lazy comparison, but he is basically the French Eli Roth. And he's gone off to America and he's done very, very well. He's made more films than his contemporaries, shall we say. But in France, just after that, so after, I would say, the New French Extremity movement finished in sort of 2004-ish, you had films like Calvaire, which is Belgian, by Fabrice Duvaltz, who is a very underrated director, I would say. And that is sort of a torture porn film in and of itself, with, again, sort of some weirdness in there. So you could kind of say it belongs to New French Extremity, but that's sort of up to you. But then very soon after that, you had other films that came out in France. So specifically Them, or Ill, by David Moreau and Javier Palou, which is like a home invasion film. You had Shaitan, or Satan, by Kim Chapiron, incidentally starring Vincent Cassel and Monica Bellucci, which is all right, not something I would ever watch again. And then more importantly, you had Frontiers by Javier Jen, and Inside by Julien Maury and Alexandra Bustillo, which are these definite horror films made by people who are fans of the genre, who are trying to make horror films consciously that happen to be really violent or have these sort of nihilistic themes. And these, to me, don't necessarily belong to New French Extremity. One of the interesting things in my research for this show, and this is very true, is that France doesn't really have a lot of history of horror cinema. Like, I remember at the time in the mid-2000s being very excited about all these kind of very gory, very violent horror films coming out in France, but these are almost like an aberration. This is just a coincidence that they all happened to come out at the time, and Logier has even said this in interviews. In fact, all the directors that I just mentioned all have explained that, you know, there's no kind of market in France for horror cinema. Like, horror films are kind of looked down upon. They're condescended against by critics and sort of even audiences. Like, all these films, they tend to make their money outside of France, in America, Canada, UK, Australia, etc., which is a shame. Like, you know, even the most well-known kind of horror film in the history of French cinema, something like Eyes Without a Face, did not make a lot of money in France at the time. Was, you know, haven't you heard this before? It was kind of, you know, savaged by critics, etc. You know, tale as old as time, Beauty and the Beast and all that kind of stuff. So it's interesting that kind of since Martyrs came out, there haven't really been a lot of horror films made in France at all. I think Martyrs kind of the high point of the kind of French, you know, new French extremity slash torture porn kind of movement. And then since then, it just has kind of died off, and you get the odd film every now and again, which kind of, oh, this film's come out in France. But yeah, other than that, it's just is what it is. It's a bit of a shame. So, yeah, my point is Martyrs part of New French Extremity? It kind of is and it isn't. Like, I imagine these directors were influenced by what was going on in America at the time. They were influenced by what was going on in France at the time, and it's this kind of perfect storm of all these kind of different factors that brings you a film like Martyrs. So that's kind of the background to Martyrs in and of itself. So what I'm going to do now for you guys is I'm going to press stop and I'm going to watch Martyrs, which I'm absolutely shitting myself because, yeah, I'm exposing myself to trauma that really you don't want to be exposing to yourself. But okay, I'm doing this for the show, so whatever. I'm going to be a man, I'm going to suck it up. And once I've watched the film, I'm going to come back and I'm going to give you the rest of my review and my thoughts on the film itself. So I'm going to see you guys in a bit. Well, I've just finished watching Martyrs for the second time. I literally just finished watching it about 15 minutes or so ago, and I guess I'm a lot more desensitized to this kind of stuff than I thought, because I wouldn't exactly describe the movie as fun, but you know what? I'm out of it. I'm not psychologically scarred or anything like that, which is kind of worrying. I think this is the effect of watching a film for the second time. When you know what's going to happen when you watch a film, it's not quite the same as when you watch it the first time. Because, oh boy, like, yeah, when I watched this film for the first time and I had no idea what was happening, I didn't know what to expect, it was a trip, let's put it that way. Yeah. So, in terms of the movie itself, I should probably give you the synopsis, because I didn't actually give you the synopsis before. So the story is actually really, really simple. So the two main characters are Lucy and Anna. Lucy, as an adult, is played by Malena Gempanois, and Anna, as an adult, is played by Morjana Alloui. And Lucy, when she was a little girl, she was held captive in some kind of dilapidated slaughterhouse type place, the kind of place that you would get in something like Saw or Hostel. She manages to escape and she's put in an orphanage, and she becomes friends with Anna. And then you jump forward 15 years later, we're introduced to this sort of normal white bourgeois family just in the middle of France somewhere. And then after about 5 minutes, Lucy turns up and shoots them all with a shotgun, really violently, Arnie style. And the reason that she's done that is because she believes that the two parents were the ones that were involved in holding her captive 15 years ago. Anna is there for moral support because they both are kind of heavily codependent on each other. Lucy, however, is clearly very psychologically damaged. She, as a child, would see this figure, I guess, this naked woman with scars all over her body. And she continues to see her even as an adult. And then about halfway through the film, things kind of take a bit of a dramatic turn, if you put it that way. And then the film goes to some very, very dark places, shall we say. Which is, I think, putting it mildly. Yeah, so in terms of the film itself, did I enjoy it? Yes, I enjoyed it very much. I would say that, first of all, the film is very, very well made. I would say that unlike a lot of films of this type, there's definite purpose to the camera work and the production design and things of that nature. So mostly the film takes place in sort of this very nice big house. It's got a lot of very kind of light coloured walls. There will appear to be white walls. And the torture chamber, place, basement, whatever you want to call it, in the bottom of the house is also very, very clean. That's the thing I would say about this film in comparison to a lot of torture porn films, if you want to call them that, is in a lot of these other torture porn films, where the torture takes place, it will be in an abandoned warehouse somewhere, or it will be in some scummy person's house or attic or basement, and so everywhere will be really filthy and dirty. Nope, this is a very clean, very sterile type of place. And it's the kind of place you could probably eat off the floor if you wanted to. Not that I obviously recommend doing that, but yeah, it's the kind of place where, yeah, you wouldn't expect this type of stuff to be going on, shall we say. What I also like about the film is the camera work and the editing. So the camera work is really awesome. I would say that it's similar to how Bergman shoots in a lot of ways. It's very weird, you know, comparing this film to sort of Ingmar Bergman, one of the greatest directors ever. But what I like about Bergman is that he shoots a lot of his characters in close-up. So they'll be giving these long monologues to the camera, and they will show basically pretty much very close to their face. And that, to me, helps me, anyway, identify with the characters. And that's something that happens in this film as well. So for the first half of the film, where you've got Lucy, and she's, yeah, clearly very distressed, and she's seeing things, and she's very distraught about everything that's going on. You can see the anguish in her face and things like that. And Anna, for most of the film, particularly the second half of the film, when she's being beaten, when all this horrible stuff is going on in the film, again, you can see all her reactions as well. And it's very, very important, obviously, near the end of the film as well, when she has her transcendental experience, shall we say, where what Logier does is he does something which I've never really seen before, and I thought this is very interesting. It's the sort of thing that Gaspar Noé kind of did, actually, in Into the Void, in a way, where you... it's a really awesome shot, actually. I don't remember this, actually, from the first time that I watched Martyrs, but when Anna is lying there, no skin, you know, having this... in this kind of catatonic state, shall we say, experiencing this martyrdom, the camera kind of goes very, very, very close up into her eye, and then it kind of basically, the idea is it goes into her eye, and we see kind of what she sees, and she sees this flickering lights, and she's in this like euphoric state or whatever. And yeah, it reminds me of the DMT trip in Into the Void. So I thought that was really, really cool. I like the editing of the film. I like the use of fade to black transitions between different scenes. I think that worked really well. There's a couple of times where that was used in the film. So there's a scene about 30 minutes in where Lucy and Anna are moving the dead bodies of the family that Lucy has shot to the bathroom because they don't know what they're going to do with the bodies. And as they're moving each member of the family into the bathtub, it kind of fades to black and then comes back in. And when Anna is being beaten in the second half of the film, all those scenes, it would fade to black and then come back again. And that has a cool effect because we don't know how long these periods of time are going for. So in the second half of the film, where Anna is sort of being held captive and all the torture stuff is going on, we don't know how long that goes on for. It could be weeks, it could be months, for all we know. So I thought that was a cool way to kind of establish the transition of time and to make it go really quickly. And as well as that, I would say that the performances of the main two actresses in the film are generally very good as well. Weirdly, neither of the two leads have appeared in really that many other films, I would say. It's the kind of thing where I would have thought that maybe these guys would have had some kind of notoriety and maybe been able to kind of appear in, let's say, more mainstream fare kind of afterwards, because it's possible. But that didn't happen for whatever reason. But I thought their performances were very good, as was the performance of the supporting characters as well. There's a curious little footnote, actually. So one of the supporting characters, who's only in the film for about 5 minutes, so the son of the family that Lucy kills after about 5 minutes of the film is played by Javier Dolan, the Canadian director who's made such films as Mommy and Lawrence Anyways and films like that, which are really good. I enjoy them very much. And this was something he appeared in before he made any of his films. So I thought that was a cool little footnote. You always tend to get stuff like that where an actor or an actress, like right at the start of their career, will appear in a film, like in a very small role. And this is a good example of that. So I guess the main thing to kind of talk about, if we're going to talk about a film like Martyrs, is how it is different from Hostel. Let's say, for example, Hostel's my whipping boy this series, for anyone who didn't listen to the episode that I did on it. Now, what I would say the difference is between Hostel and a film like Martyrs is, obviously, Martyrs takes itself more seriously. Now, some people are going to say, well, you know, Hostel, it's a fun film, you're not really meant to, you know, you're not meant to think about it too much. You know, it's just dumb Americans going to another country. They get tortured. You know, one of them survives and lives to see another day, or a sequel in this case, where he dies in the first 5 minutes of the film, which is quite funny. But anyway, whereas Martyrs is obviously, you know, it's a lot more serious. It's a lot more nihilistic. You know, lots of there isn't any levity in Martyrs. Let's put it that way. I would say that even though Martyrs, I don't think, has a message as such, or at least not in the same way as Hostel is supposed to have a message. I mean, the closest thing I could say about Martyrs is the two leads are not white. Let's put it that way. Whereas all the other characters in the film are white. And there was a lot of social unrest in France at this time. No, not that dissimilar to kind of the world today. And Hostel has this, you know, underlying, very obvious kind of critique of kind of American imperialism and all this kind of stuff that I talked about on the Hostel episode. But I would say the key difference between Hostel and Martyrs, just on a surface level, is the way that the films treat torture. So in Hostel, like in all these kind of torture porny films for the most part, you've got someone, normally a man, sometimes a woman, tied to a chair. And you'll have some person who, you know, is either a creepy guy, or in the case of Hostel, it's sort of wacky foreigners who have paid lots of money for the, you know, great joy of torturing people. And then basically what will happen is they will do something really horrible, like they will cut someone's Achilles tendon, or they'll cut someone's fingers off, or they'll cut off parts of their body. And the person sat in the chair will scream a lot, and the person doing the torturing, they might laugh or whatever. And the whole thing is kind of played for kind of like black comedy or sort of hysteria or whatever. You know, it's not something that I can particularly take that seriously. You know, I'm pretty jaded to this shit, as you can probably imagine. Whereas Martyrs is very, very different. So the torture scenes in Martyrs are, first of all, very repetitive, and they are very relentless. So they take place over like a 15 or 20 minute period, which a lot of people have complained about. You know, there are people out there who, when they watch Martyrs, they like the first half of the film, when it's more like a thriller and there's gore, but it's kind of like people cutting themselves, or it's people getting shot, or people you know, that kind of stuff. It's not someone being punched and slapped over and over again, or being punched in the stomach, that kind of stuff. Because that is a lot more kind of realistic, where if you were going to torture someone legit over a long period of time, obviously you're not going to cut their fingers off, for example. And that's not really the point of the film. The way the torture scenes are done in Martyrs are very, very different to any other film that I've seen in this subgenre, if you want to call it that. So we don't really know who the torturers are. They're very faceless. They don't say anything. They don't express any emotions. They're just people doing a job. And yeah, it's not very gory. None of the violence in the film is sexualized in any way, which is interesting because, again, like I mentioned earlier in the show, the main characters in Loggia's films are women without exception. And this is obviously the main one. There's only three or four kind of male actors in this film, and none of them really have any kind of great purpose in the story. I mean, apart from kind of the members of the family, but they, as I said, get shot after 5 minutes. So, you know, not really, you know, they don't really do an awful lot. So the violence is, say, it's not very gory. It's pretty repetitive and it's degrading to the sense of the character is being degraded, but they're not being degraded in a sexual way, which takes out any kind of accusations that you can make of misogyny in the film. Because, believe it or not, everybody, you can have a character who's a woman being tortured, and it's not about the fact they're a woman. There's no kind of, like, sleazy stuff in there. It's just the fact that they are a person being tortured. So that's my kind of point of view on it anyway. In terms of the first half of the film, when I first saw the film, I didn't... This is another one of those films that Loggia has made where the first half of the film goes in one direction and the second half of the film goes in like a totally different direction that you didn't really see coming. This one has the benefit of the second half of the film not going in a totally unexpected direction from the first half of the film. So in that sense, it's kind of the best narrative that Loggia has made of all his films. And also, despite the fact that on paper you can give the story in under a minute, there is stuff going on even when the story itself is not moving. And that's kind of how the character who is the presence that Lucy sees, that she hallucinates, that attacks her when she's actually attacking herself and things like that, that's how that's used. So that works quite well in pacing terms. Like, I didn't have any issues with the pacing of the film at all. As I said, you know, there are people out there who prefer the first kind of 45 minutes to an hour of the film, and they really aren't a fan of the torture stuff. But the torture stuff, really, as horrible as this is going to sound, is the part that actually makes the film kind of more than just a standard kind of weird home invasion film with a twist, which is kind of what the first half is. Like, don't get me wrong, like, the first half is good, and I was engaged when I watched it, but really the second half of the film is kind of, well, what makes it, for lack of a better term. And it's the second half of the film that the remake of Martyrs gets completely wrong. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to talk about kind of how the remake differs from the original, and kind of the perils of remaking a film that is not from America to an American audience, shall we say. So Martyrs, obviously, it's not the first film in the world that has been remade across different countries. So the first film of this that I can remember anyway is The Vanishing. So The Vanishing was actually remade by the same director, and it's still fucked up, and everyone talks about the remake of The Vanishing being completely wrong-headed, and the reason for that is they changed the ending, which is kind of the whole point of The Vanishing, at least the original version anyway, in the first place. So basically, in the remake, the guy gets rescued, which is sort of not really the point, because you've completely killed kind of the message of your story. So in Martyrs, as everyone knows, so the film, well, the original anyway, is a very violent, be very nihilistic, potentially, if you see it, and be incredibly depressing. So what they've done, first of all, is they've kept the story pretty much the same as the original, or at least the first half of the film is pretty much the same. So I should state for the record, so the remake is directed by Kevin and Michael Gertz. No idea who they are. I haven't really made anything since, which is quite, you know, telling. The screenwriter of the remake, though, is a guy called Mark L. Smith, who is the screenwriter of Vacancy, which is a film I haven't seen, by the way, which is kind of a torture porn, maybe. It kind of just sounds like The Strangers, but whatever. He's also the screenwriter of The Revenant, which is a very good film. So, okay, could be something here. But there's a problem. So the first problem is that this was produced by Blumhouse. This is before Blumhouse were, like, you know, I guess, like, the new modern version of something like Trauma or A24, but for dummies, essentially, if you want to call them that. I don't know. So they made it. Unfortunately, the film looks very cheap, which is a bit of a problem. Also, the lighting in the remake is fucking horrendous. Like, in the original, all the scenes look kind of great. The film isn't, I would say, consciously stylish. It's not a film like, I don't know, like an Argento film where it's been deliberately made to look a certain way aesthetically, like it, like artificially, that's kind of what I mean, where it's got like funny colored lights or it just doesn't look realistic. This looks kind of realistic. Obviously it's got like the desaturated look that all these 2000s horror films have, but like I said, sort of the interior of the house is quite striking. It's quite bright. There's all these white walls everywhere. And when you get the torture scenes, they take place in this kind of sleek-looking facility that's kind of dark, but you can actually see what's going on everywhere. I really like the production design of the facility, actually. It's kind of, it's got this weird kind of, I don't know if anyone's been on like the London Underground or any other kind of subway system where you've got these sort of computer graphic kind of adverts when you go up and down the escalators. It's got kind of that, but with photos of people in like transcendental states of consciousness or whatever, which I thought was, I don't know, kind of interesting. And yeah, it looks very sleek. Like I said, in the remake, you can't see a fucking thing that's going on when they're indoors. The only scenes you can see anything are in the flashbacks where they're outside. Every other scene is too dark, which completely ruins the film. So the film looks shit. Second thing that's a problem with it is in the first half of the film, they stuck very, very closely to the plot of the original. So it's got the same plot for that. So, you know, Lucy escapes from the orphanage. She makes friends with Anna. They make a much bigger deal out of the scenes where they're at the orphanage than the original does. There are flashbacks in the original, but they all take place mostly when Lucy was being tortured. So you actually see a scene of, you know, her as a little girl getting hit, which is obviously not very nice, but you actually do see her escape and you see her kind of, you know, why she feels guilty that there was this little girl that she couldn't save, you know, and she escaped and, you know, she carries that with her, which is ultimately why she has these visions and why she ultimately commits suicide. And other than that, yeah, like I said, you get all the kind of greatest hits of the original film. Like, you've got, obviously, the family being killed, the mother surviving somehow, but then Lucy killing her again anyway, although not being bludgeoned to death in the head by a hammer, which is, yeah, very, very gruesome. Very, very gruesome death, I would say. But, yeah, it's all basically the same. So I'm like, I'm watching the remake and I'm thinking, okay, fair enough. They're doing kind of like the Psycho thing where it's a pointless remake. So it's not terrible, but yeah, it's kind of pointless and like it's less violent and it's like, all right, fine, whatever. Also completely removed any of the subtext that I mentioned earlier, if that is indeed intentional. And then you get to the second half of the film. So the first problem that happens is in the original film, one of the key sort of story notes, if you want to call it that, is that Anna is basically a very kind-hearted person, and the reason that it's such a horrible thing that happens to her is because she's only there because Lucy asked her to be there. Like, she has nothing against this family. In fact, she thinks Lucy is mental, and, like, how could she think that this family kind of tortured her? You know, she's delusional. And she's just there for support, for lack of a better word. And then when she finds the woman who's in this kind of basement sort of torture facility, you know, the one with the metal helm, like, thing over, I don't know what to describe it, but it's this metal device that's screwed into her head, and it's just, yeah, not very nice at all. It's very, yeah, very grim. Like, again, she kind of helps her, and she takes this contraption off of her head and things like that. And yeah, she ends up being kind of brutally kind of tortured by this secret society. So that is all very, very sad, because she doesn't deserve it. That's another thing, incidentally, that I would say is a big difference between Martyrs and, let's say, Hostel, is because the characters in Hostel are fucking awful. They're terrible people. Like, why would I want these people to survive? Why do I care about any of these characters? The characters in Martyrs are, yeah, I care about those characters very deeply. Like, so when all this horrible shit happens to them, particularly Anna, who, as I said, has done nothing wrong, then yeah, obviously I have a lot of sympathy for Anna and what she's going through. She doesn't deserve it. It's very horrible and protracted. So yeah, but key difference in the remake. So Lucy, in the original, commits suicide because of the guilt, and she just can't take it anymore, and she thinks Anna has betrayed her by helping out this, the mother of this family, who she believes was responsible for torturing her. In the remake, Lucy just survives. So I'm like, all right, that's a bit stupid, fine, whatever. And then the second change is, instead of the person in the basement being this woman with the metal device on her head, you know, which is horrible, it's not meant to be nice, and yes, very horrible, it's just a little girl. Just a little girl. For some reason. So you've basically now got three characters, and because this secret society turn up, and the Mademoiselle character in the remake is horrible, by the way. The Mademoiselle character in the remake is the worst thing about the remake. Like, in the original, there is basically this couple of minute long exposition scene where, yeah, it's just, I'm here to give exposition, I'm here to explain what's actually going on here, and then she goes off. And fair enough, you can probably complain about that, that it's like, well, you know, whatever, what purpose does this character serve? But in the remake, it's just, they picked someone who has no character whatsoever. It's just some random older woman. And she delivers her lines very flatly. Like, this woman does not believe a single thing that is coming out of her mouth. I can tell that she's giving a very, very insincere performance when she's doing all these monologues or whatever. It was just, oh my god, it was just dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. And the worst part, I guess, if you want to call it the worst part, is instead of Anna being captured and beaten and force-fed like this ugly-looking processed food that looks like baby food, or it could be gruel or whatever, it's just Lucy. She's just getting tortured again, but we can't really see it. And Anna is, and this little girl are just basically being held captive for no reason. They're just there, which is just unbelievably wrong-headed and stupid. And then the worst part of all is about 10 or 15 minutes from the end of the film, Anna, they just, this society just let Anna go. They're not interested in Anna. Like, she's just there to get exposition delivered to her. And then, yeah, she just lets, they just let her go. And then she tries to rescue her friend, and she kills about six guys with a gun. Like, she just shoots these six guys. It's, oh my god, it's just so bad. It's so bad, everybody. Just talking about it just makes me angry. Oh, and the ending is pretty dumb as well. It's just, oh. So yeah, don't watch the remake of Martyrs. Watch the original. I mean, don't get me wrong, yeah, the original Martyrs is very kind of hard to watch in places. And yeah, it's not exactly fun. But at the same time, you know what? It's a good film. It's well made. I would say, going back to kind of the differences between Hostel and Martyrs, let's say, is with Martyrs, the torture itself, it's not, you know, a bunch of people kind of being kind of really nasty and kind of, you know, inflicting pain on a character for our entertainment. It's not entertainment at all. It's torture as pain. It's delivering pain to a character in a film. Like, if you read interviews with Pascal Laugier around the time that he made the film, like, first of all, he says he was not in a very good place mentally when he made the film. I am not surprised, quite frankly. But second of all, he said the Martyrs is, it's about pain. So in an interview with Electric Sheep magazine, question is, at the heart of the film lies a definition of the word martyr, which explains the extreme suffering to which the characters are subjected. Can you tell us more about this? Laugier says, for me, the martyr represents the one who, having no other choice but to suffer, manages to do something with this pain. Of course, it's an extreme projection, entirely disenchanted, of what I was telling you about today's world. Since we don't believe in anything, since the world is increasingly divided between winners and losers, what is left to the losers but to do something with their pain? Deep down, that is what the film is about. And in this interview, he talks about things like how the relationship between Lucy and Arrow is very tender, it's very moving, how they love each other. And, you know, you can tell they do. There is a hint in the original, not so much in the remake, around possibly them being in a lesbian relationship as well, which is kind of, say, it's kind of hinted at, but it's not really kind of fully developed. It's just an undertone, you know, it's there. You know, either you get it or you don't. Also, interestingly, in this interview, because I guess to kind of round up the view, this has been a very rambly review, guys. I'm very sorry. One of the things that obviously people know about Martyrs is the extreme reactions that it provokes in people. So similar to Irreversible, for example, when it premiered at the Cannes Film Festival, there were walkouts and things of that nature. When it played at Fright Fest, which is it's a screening of, I definitely wish I'd been at, let's put it that way. Apparently when the film ended, there was just a state of kind of people just sat there in sort of numb shock, kind of like I had when I first watched it, where people were like, all right, okay, didn't really know kind of where to go next. But anyway, so the question to Laugier is, watching the film is a profoundly unsettling experience, no shit, as we are led on the same journey of pain as the central characters. What sort of reaction did you want to provoke in the audience? And Laugier's response is, I swear that to discuss audiences has never been my motivation. When critics describe the film as butchery, a display of guts and gore, it saddens me very much. I see my film as a rather reserved work, in fact. I would like it to touch the viewers, to plunge them into a state of profound melancholy, just like mine when I was filming, because I think that Martyrs is really a melodrama. Hard, violent, very disturbing, but a melodrama all the same. I hope it will be a powerful experience for those who will see it, because I put everything I had into it. I find it hard to disagree with that, quite frankly. From what I've gathered through interviews, making the film does not sound like it was a lot of fun. But it was a worthwhile enterprise, and overall, like I said at the start, I don't know if I've made this clear necessarily from the review, but I did enjoy the film very much. I think I worked myself up into a kind of frenzy of fear and anxiety, but it's something that I think is definitely worth watching. It's not a fun watch in the slightest. It's definitely not a very, very good date movie, let's put it that way. But I think of all the films that I talked about earlier, so we're talking, yeah, again, just to reiterate, Horton and Sean and Them and Inside and Frontiers and Satan, I mean, this is the best of those films. And and of all the kind of horror films that came out as a result of the New French Extremity, this is sort of the one. And you can tell it was the one because they didn't make any really afterwards. They kind of, I guess there was this feeling that this was the high point. This was the ne plus ultra, shall we say, of these kind of New French Extremity torture films. And yeah, this is the high point, if you want to put it that way. But, and this seems like a very silly question to ask, considering that I feel like I've pretty much just answered it, but how bad is it? So, anyone who's listened to this show knows that I'm quite hard to disgust or to move in kind of like a negative way, if that makes sense. So I'm quite easygoing when it comes to dates. I have to say this is a very bad date movie. I'm not going to say it's the worst, because the worst to me is kind of saved for like the absolute worst. So like the most horrible of the horrible. Like we're talking like films that are disreputable, that you feel unclean from watching them. Like you just wonder why you're watching it. Like if you're going to end up on some sort of secret watch list, you know, films that are just absolutely disgusting and vile and terrible. Martyrs is not that at all. It's not fun. It's very, very downbeat. It's very gory. It's very violent. It's got some quite queasy stuff in it. Like, you know, self-harm. Anything, basically anyone who has encountered self-harm before or anything like that, they're not going to have a lot of fun watching this. And yes, I admit the last 30 minutes of the film is quite an ordeal. It's not as horrible as it sounds on paper, though. It's just repetitive and it's brutal and it's quite depressing, but it's not disgusting and it's not sleazy. And I wouldn't even say it's horrible. It's just relentless. So, yeah, that's yeah, obviously not a good date movie. Please don't watch this on a date. Like, come on, people. Like, I hope you guys know better than that. But yeah, it's just, yeah, it's definitely an experience. Let's put it that way. Whether it's an enjoyable experience or something that you get anything out of is entirely up to you, of course. So that is Martyrs. It's something that I've been putting off for quite a long time, and it was something that, I'm not going to lie, it did take a lot of energy and a lot of kind of barriers that I had to overcome to watch it. But I did, and I made it. And yeah, I'm kind of thankful for that. So go me, everybody. But I'm doing it for you guys. I'm doing it for the show. I'm never watching Dear Zachary, though. Just never gonna happen. So yeah, don't even ask, everybody. On the next show in the series, because we gotta keep on going, gotta bring you guys more of the worst date movies ever, we're sticking with torture porn, but I'm gonna do something very slightly different. So on the Hostel show, which I keep referring to, I mentioned Audition. And I was thinking to myself, like, well, you know what? I would like to cover a Japanese film that's sort of in this sort of torture porn vein, kind of 2000s vein. Why not do Audition? Audition is kind of where a lot of these films kind of originated from in the first place. So that's what I'm going to do. So I'm going to bring Miroslava Hartman back on the show, and we're going to talk about Audition. So I hope you guys enjoy that one. And yeah. Until next time, I ask you to like, share, and subscribe and all that good stuff. And I'll see you on the next show for more of the worst date movies ever. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow me on social media, you can at Worst Date Movies Ever. And don't forget to click subscribe wherever you're listening to this right now to never miss another episode of Worst Date Movies Ever.